Hello and welcome to Live from the Dark Room. My name is Andy Henderson. I'm glad you're joining us today. I'm really excited because today I sit down with Tyler Rosenthal. Tyler is not only an incredibly talented photographer, he's a communications and marketing professional, and he's a really great friend of mine. We've worked together in a variety of ways over the last 5 years, and I'm really excited to talk to him today about what he calls his editing identity crisis. But before we get into it, you can follow Tyler at Tyler Rosenthal Photography on Instagram or at TylerRosenthalPhotography.com. That is Rosenthal, R-O-S-E-N-T-H-A-L. You can also follow our show at The Dark Room Pod on Instagram. So without further ado, let's get into the show. And a big welcome to our guest this week, Tyler Rosenthal. Welcome, Tyler. Thanks for being here with us today.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's so fun. I love it.
I am so glad that I get to chat with you, especially about what we get to talk about. But I mentioned a little bit in the intro, Tyler is a phenomenal photographer. When we met, I was a freshman in college. He was a senior. He was the photo editor for the university. Tyler, can you actually just talk a little bit about what that means, the photo editor position, for those of those listening who might not be as familiar with that process?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's actually neat because you and I both shared that position in different years. But yeah, we, Andy and I both went to the same university, and I actually now work there full time in addition to being a photographer. But yeah, as a student, there's this position. Our university doesn't have a full time photographer on staff. And so there's a student position called the photo editor, who is primarily the photographer for the university as a student, who also gets a great scholarship. Oftentimes free tuition, so that's great.
Yeah,
good deal for the student. But there's a lot of really great practical experience that student gets. They are not only like the primary photographer for the university, they are shooting for the student newspaper, the yearbook, my office that I work in now, Office of Communications and Marketing, and receive photo requests from all across campus. They're not only that primary photographer, but they also manage a staff of student photographers who are underneath them, who are either doing that as a work study job or who are doing it for academic credit if that has something to do with their major. And so there's a lot of really great experience that you get, especially if you want to pursue photography or something related in that field. So yes, I served in that position as a student. And then, yeah, I guess, Andy, you came in. Were you a freshman when I was a senior?
That's right.
Like that?
Yeah, I was a freshman.
I had actually been given a tip, like, hey, this guy's coming. Andy, he's an awesome photographer. He would love to do what you do one day. And I didn't know who he was, but I think it was at a football game. I think I kind of remember.
Yep.
And I met you, and I was like, oh, wait, you're the guy I'm supposed to keep up with. And follow. And so from then on out, I knew you, followed you. And yeah, there was no doubt that you were also extremely talented. And we're going to one day take that same student photo editor position, and then you did.
Oh man, I think that's like you were saying that. I feel like that's really how we bonded. Was through photography, and so I mean, last week I talked to Cody Giles, another photographer, and we were talking about how connections are so important for photographers, but also just how great they are, how great those experiences that you get to have because of photography and the people you get to meet. And yeah, I'm really thankful for our connection because we've just become great friends too. And it's been really cool to see how it turned from, yeah, you were photo editor and I was just coming in and I didn't really know anything about the position or how it worked. But you kind of explained it to me and I was like, yeah, I want to do that. Like, that's what I want to do. And I feel like I really learned a lot from you. I still do. But I feel like at that point, too, you taught me a lot about that position. I had so many questions. And another thing we talked about last week was, you know, how important it is for experienced photographers to share knowledge with younger photographers and, you know, kind of mentor them and train them if they have the ability. So, yeah, I think that was just awesome. So, I mean, that's really
Now you are teaching me things. So I think the role has definitely reversed. You have gone way past any expectations. I mean, we knew you were going to do well, but yeah, you are phenomenal as well. It's been interesting for me. Like I mentioned, I'm now on staff at that university in communications and marketing. And so now I get to still observe those students who I don't supervise them, but I get to see those students in that role that I was in and that you are in. And there's oftentimes an organic mentorship relationship that forms to because of my past experience and my professional experience now being a photographer. And so, yeah, it was you and one of your former guests, Alex Blankenship, both, served in that role. And it was really fun for me to watch you grow and then take on that position. And then from there, you know, us go back and forth and me help you through that. But then after that, graduate and go on to become extremely phenomenal photographers and professionals in the world. So it's been a joy for me to be able to watch you guys evolve and go much further than I ever did, for sure, in many ways, and develop your skill sets. It's been a joy to really watch that.
Man, it's just awesome. It's awesome, I think, for all parties involved. And you know, I'm really excited to get to chat with you specifically about what we're going to talk about. I don't want to give away too much, but before we get into it, real quick, I want to ask you a question that I ask everybody at the beginning of each podcast. If you had to use one lens and only one lens for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, my answer is probably the cliche. I don't know what everyone else is saying, but it's probably most common, the 50 millimeter. I mean, it's just so versatile.
I have not gotten a different answer yet.
Is that everyone's answer?
Everyone.
I'm sure it is. I mean, it's the cliche, but it's just, I mean, it's a cliche for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
And that was my first, like, low aperture lens, bought it off eBay. I think it was a 1.8. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, was set up from there to really, you know, dive into the deeper specs of photography and how it works, and not, some of the, of course, the gear, but also the art in the profession. Really started with that first lens. And then I've had many, many, many 50s through my year, different brands, I mean, everything. And I'm still, like, to this day, kind of switch back and forth between different things. I feel like I will never settle on one, but you never know. I've gone down a long list of, like, even looking into vintage 50s. Does that have a different rendering or coating? You know, is that going to make a big difference? And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, and they all come with different pros and cons. But that millimeter, it's just, there's something about it.
So, okay. So you've talked a little bit about the photo editor position and your experience with that, but can you tell me a little bit about your experience as a photographer as a whole, kind of where you started, where it's taken you, where you are now, kind of how you've grown through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I graduated high school, I just thought, okay, well, it'd just be cool to have a DSLR nice camera just for, you know, fun, taking pictures with friends. I don't know if I would ever, you know, be interested in that world, but I think it would just be nice to have. I liked technology and I liked media. At that point, I was going into college to study both communications, but also music. I grew up doing music and didn't know where I was going to go with either of those. But I thought, hey, you know, camera would be nice to have and kind of fit into my communications thing. So I spent some graduation money, bought some camera off of, I think, eBay, whatever the cheapest one was, and ended up just being like a Nikon D3200. And that's what started me on Nikon.
Yeah.
No other reason, was just that one was the cheapest. And I think it was a kit with a kit lens, and it just started taking pictures of friends. And I thought it was really fun. Wasn't getting paid, and no intent behind it, but just started having little shoots with my friends. And then went to college and was kind of still doing the same thing. And then that's when it was really the theater department noticed that I took pictures of people. And, you know, they are often in need of updated headshots theater promotional images. And you know that more than anyone. You excel in that area. But that's what really started me was, and my business was, the theater students on campus reaching out needing headshots. And at that point, I was also interested in exploring studio photography, which I do not do now, and I really do not have very much experience in whatsoever. But I did both indoor and outdoor headshots with these theater students, bought one of those like super cheap Amazon lighting, continuous lighting kits.
Yeah.
I think just like some sort of cloth black backdrop. And I ended up getting a larger seamless paper backdrop around that time too. And I kept everything in my car, and the roll of paper would go from the very back all the way up to the front of my dashboard to the windshield. And so no one could ever sit in like the back seat, you know, and the rolls of paper would just be your armrest.
Hey, that's commitment though.
I lived with that in my car for years, and wow. I would just set up in different classrooms at nighttime and have students come and do their headshots. And that's really how I started first making money. And then it kind of clicked. So it was like, okay, I guess I can make some money off of this. It's fun for me, but if I can make money, that's great. So I launched, you know, a Facebook page back then.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was like, you mean like, you know, that means you're professional if you have a Facebook page.
Yeah, you mean business at that point.
Of course. So I launched that, and then the rest was really history. I just started booking more and more students. It started to diversify in types. These students needed, you know, now all of a sudden they needed engagement pictures or a family picture over the holidays or whatever. And that ended up turning into weddings. And at the same time, I was doing that photo editor position for the university, which really developed my skill sets in photojournalism. And that was very, very helpful in terms of my overall journey as a photographer. And I also kind of went into some photojournalistic endeavors locally. I would shoot events and things like that. And often I did some big study abroad trips and took pictures, very photojournalistic style. Actually, one of them was featured on National Geographic.
That's
just
incredible.
Their blog. It's not the actual magazine, but that was really fun for me.
Yeah.
Won some international photo competitions and really like thought I could wanted to do a little bit of everything. I didn't really want to be locked in into what kind of photography. I was doing pretty much everything. I don't even remember how I guess I got, you know, actually I do. My very first wedding was a part of like a silent auction on campus. And I thought, you know, I'll give a wedding package in there. No one will probably want me. I've never even shot a wedding. Sure enough, somebody did. Somebody got it super cheap.
Wow.
And the rest, again, was history from after I shot my first wedding. Had the portfolio, kept going. And the university that you and I both went to is really, I mean, you're talking about networking and connections, both with our clients. I mean, that was probably the best thing for you and I in terms of our business. Is having this small knit school who everybody knew everybody, and we were known as the photographers, and we have shot a lot of those peers' weddings and everything throughout their life. And then that ended up just growing into what I have today, which is now just a wedding and portrait photography business. I did all types of photography for a long time, and then got to a point where could not keep up that pace of doing everything. Really just loved my weddings and my portraits. At the same time, when I graduated college, I had this degree in communications, and I loved communications and marketing as well as photography, and thought, you know what, I'm at the point now where I can just do photography as my full-time job, but I also love marketing and communication so much, so can I do both, and for how long? And ever since then, I have been doing it. And it gets kind of hard and exhausting at sometimes to do both, but that is part of the reason why I've also narrowed it down. It's just really weddings and portraits, and those portraits are typically just things like engagements and bridals that go along with the wedding. But that's where I ended up, and that's where I am now. And I'm really, really blessed, to totally get from the Lord, to be able to have this business and to be able to definitely have it as supplemental income, but also still pursue what I love and what I love to do, and help capture these moments for people that are really special and they want to relive.
Sure. Man, that's incredible. And you mainly now shoot weddings and bridals, engagements, those types of shoots and portraits. But is there a specific project or series that you've worked on, even years ago when you were shooting all types of things, that you feel you're most proud of?
Yeah, you know, I probably have two answers to that question. One is what I already mentioned, one of my international photos being featured on National Geographic.
Yeah.
And part of why I'm proud of that is, one, of course, being featured by them. But two, that photo was on a entry-level cheapo Amazon or maybe eBay at that time. I think it was eBay camera with a kit lens, not a prime lens at all. And at this point, I would say it's over-edited. Back then, it's probably fine. But, you know, it was just so, it was before I had any, quote, professional gear, didn't really know what I was doing, but it was just, I mean, it had the basics of a good image. And it was a portrait of a man in Greece, and you could tell his life and his story based on his face that I captured in his eyes. And it was just one of those gripping images that people loved and got attention. And that just kind of proves that you don't always have to have the nicest gear to get some sort of, you know, notoriety or publishing. You know, it's just more about the image and the story it tells. So that is one, my first answer. Second is what I did mention about those studio headshots set up in classroom. While my work doesn't look like that anymore, and I would probably do it different now if I was going to redo that, I'm also just proud of myself for I think the gumption to be able to do that and to create these what looks like pretty professional studio images as such a novice and with continuous cheapo lights and in a classroom that no one would know looks like a studio somewhere. and now again, you know, as you look back on your work, you would do so much differently and it looks, you know, amateur. But back then, I mean, they still look professional, but I am kind of proud of myself for figuring that out and just going with it and not knowing what I'm doing, but creating these images that people still use as their theater headshots or professional images.
Definitely. I love that. And I love what you said about the first photo that was published, that you feel like it was probably, looking back, over edited now, but probably okay then. And I think it's really interesting how that sort of changes over time. Today specifically, like I wanted to talk to you about finding your style. And I think it's incredibly important as a photographer to discover how you're going to uniquely shoot and edit your photos. I think finding your shooting style is incredibly important. But I just want to talk to you today a little bit about specifically finding your editing style. I think you have a really interesting story about that. And I feel like a lot of photographers can relate to it in one way or another. So could you just tell me a little bit about what happened and what you've referred to as your editing identity crisis?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I'm sure a lot of people have gone through something similar. I feel like mine is maybe a little bit more drawn out or
sure.
than others.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, like a lot of people, you know, have just an easier time, especially nowadays, with finding their style or identifying with a certain look or feel, especially now that we have all these resources like Instagram and so many presets out there and photographers, national photographers that are easy to follow and you know, kind of be inspired by. Back then when I started, I mean, Instagram was not even a thing yet. It was just starting and it was not for these types of images.
Right.
And so we didn't have things like that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, started more photojournalistically. And at that point, that editing style still kind of crossed over into wedding and portraiture. And so that, I mean, the just kind of natural, clear, colorful, and some good contrast is how I started, and that's where a lot of people booked me on that style. And as things, and that was in, but as things started to shift, it's so interesting to watch trends in the photography world, and especially in the wedding photography world. It just changes, and nowadays just changes so quickly.
Right.
But at that point, everything was shifting to light and airy, film-like, super bright, and sometimes even overexposed, very neutral, not as saturated, the classic just light and airy look that people still do today. It's evolved even now from what it was then, and back then it was even more light and airy. And I loved it. I did not know how to do it, but I loved it and wanted to go after that look. I had some local photographers that I really looked up to and had that look, who even shot things like my wedding or my friends' weddings, or just people that I just admired their work. And I did not want to be the exact same thing as them, because we all need to be different. But I tried to kind of go that direction, and I I just did not know how. I mean, I tried to edit all my images in a different way and had no really education on really how to achieve that look. And that's both on the side of the shooting and on the editing. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people fall into that in that category where you maybe find a way that you want your images to look and you think it's all in the editing. It's often not. It's often a combo of the shooting style and in the editing. And so I, you know, looking back, I still was getting clients. All my photos kind of shifted in style, and for some probably shifted way too quickly. You know, nowadays they people help you with a plan if you're going to shift your editing style to slowly introduce it so people, you know, can get used to it and your clients are, you know, so shocked. Well, I didn't do that. I kind of went cold turkey, bam, all of a sudden my stuff looked different. And I never heard from any clients that, you know, they were unhappy. But I'm sure maybe some were surprised when their photos looked a little different. But like, sure. I said, still was booking clients, still was growing and learning. But yeah, my photos just took a major turn, probably for the worse. And tried to go through this for the style that I didn't know how to do and was not working for me. But I didn't give up. I just kept going, and that kind of turned into years and years of me just trying to figure out, how do I want to edit? How do I want to shoot? What is my style? What do I want Tyler Rosenthal's photography to look and feel like? And that has cost me so many preset packages, so much money through the days. I mean, I've like done so much research on how to edit these different types of looks and feels.
Sure.
So many hours down that drain, which I don't think is lost at all. It's all been a part of, you know, making me who I am today and giving me the education experience that I have in terms of editing. But it all kind of taught me through all those years. Sure, there are some ways that you can edit to make it look different. But there's a point where it's like, if you don't know how to do it, and honestly, I probably am not even shooting the way I need to. A lot of those film-like looks, you really, to get that best look, you need experience in film to really be able to replicate that. I have no experience in film, and I honestly don't really have any interest in getting into film. I love it. Absolutely love the look, but I have no interest in doing it myself. Yeah. Or the time, really. And so
sure.
That, you know, it was, for me, it was teaching me, you know what, I think you really just need to do what you know how to do and what you, what feels more like you and not like other people. And again, there's part of that that's like, what is me? Still don't know. But going back a little bit to where I started, not all the way back, because you still have to be relevant, but you don't have to follow all the trends in photography.
Yeah.
You need, of course, timeless work that people are going to love. Yes, there are aspects about editing that you can look out of style, in quote, and not necessarily in, but there's a degree in there that doesn't matter. You know, there are something, one, people are probably going to still book you because people have different preferences, and some people won't ever know what's in style. Some people can't even look at the two images and know that they're different.
Right.
But yeah, it's more about who you are and the images that you are creating and what your style is going to look like. It's not about following what other people are doing. And I it's great to be inspired by people, but not copying them. Of course, you need to be original to you and stick within like your experience and what you know how to do. And I don't want that to sound like you shouldn't explore or learn new things, but you also need to be cognizant of your brand, what you want your brand to look like, and what you know how to do, and not try to be somebody that you're not.
Yeah, no, I think that is just exactly it. And I have felt the exact same way for a long time. And, you know, I had a lot of problems finding my style and switching up my style. When I shot weddings, I just shot them very dark, very moody, a lot of grain, things like that. And I don't think I was necessarily trying to emulate film. I just was trying to go with what was in at the time. And, but I think it's interesting because I think you and I have had very different forms and styles of editing over the years. I think even when you were shooting more light and airy, I was shooting darker and darker and more contrasted. And,
right.
I do think that it, there is a time and a place for both. But I always thought that when I was shooting, I always thought that the camera was going to help my edit. So I was like, I just need a new camera and then I'll be able to achieve that look. Or I just need to, like you said, buy that new preset pack and I'm going to get the exact look that I want. And it never really happened for me until I was able to really dive into editing more and figure out exactly what it is that I wanted to do. I don't really want to get into a whole debate on presets, but I do know photographers who never use presets and they don't think that anyone should use presets. Again, don't want to, you know, I want to keep the conversation moving, but I just want to know your thoughts real quick on that, on what you think about, using presets and why photographers should or shouldn't or anything like that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, like I said, I have gone through many, many, many preset packs and spent a lot of money on them. And I don't think I've ever, you know, stuck with one for too long. And I don't think I've ever used one even when I stuck with some for a little while. I don't think I would ever use it just as is. I would apply the preset, but then make another million of tweaks to get that preset to where I wanted it. And so I would disagree with those people who would say that they're, you know, it takes away a level of artistry or it's not art. I think that it can often, you know, be a crutch for some people. I think it's just a tool. And for me and for many photographers, that's often how we use them, is as a starting point to get, you know, different colors or contrast or something into a certain realm already as a starting point. And then we just tweak everything from there to get it to look like what we want it to look like, our personal style. And so that to me is a tool, and still the artistry is more so in the image that you're creating. And then after you apply the preset, what you do to it, no preset is magic. You know, I've seen tons of before and afters where they look like that, and I think for some it really does do that exact before and after. But that is I think, you know, more about the shooting and more about your lighting, and if it is really a one click preset for you. But oftentimes
never been my experience.
Yeah, it's not. And it's even still, if you get that one click, you probably still want to tweak something a little bit just to make it a little bit more your style. So no, I don't think it takes away artistry. I think it enhances artistry in many ways. It gives you a new color palette in some sense. If you gave me a new set of paints and all different kind of colors, then I would create something different. And, you know, I don't think everyone views it that way, but I think it can be that way. You know, many people, it's now so much easier because of the presets that are out there to have, in quote, professional or on-trend looking images. And so that has contributed to sometimes the oversaturation of photographers out there. You know, everybody now is a photographer. Right. And a lot of them have an easier time than we did getting bookings or having their images look more professional or on-trend because they have these tools. Like presets that help them edit in a way that's more on trend, when maybe they would never know how to edit like that originally without the preset.
Sure.
That, you know, I think that could be looked down upon, but it's a tool and they're just using it in a smart way. So yeah. Props to them in a way.
I like that. I love what you said about new paint as well. I think that's super interesting. I've never thought of it that way. But yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it. So if there was a young photographer trying to figure out his own or her own editing style, what would you recommend they do? I mean, how would you instruct them, I guess is the word, to go about finding that style or learning how to use Tone Curve or learning how to use HSL sliders and things like that? I guess, what would your advice be to them?
Yeah. Well, first I would give them my cautionary tale of my story and advise them not to switch up their editing style on their clients. even though I, like I said, didn't have anyone complain. But yeah, I think all of that can be so extremely overwhelming, and there are so many sliders and so many possibilities that are not wrong or correct ever. Mm-hmm. It is all subjective, all art, all what you want it to be. And so my advice is to just first learn what they do. Maybe that's just messing around with them and seeing, you know, oh, if I bring this up, it, you know, what is luminance? Oh, this is what that does, you know, or right. Watching tutorials or reading things, you know, there's a lot of resources out there that can help you do that. But the first part is definitely learning what those things do. And again, there are some levels that are just subjective. Like there's not a right way that you're going to learn how to do something. But knowing what they do can help you know what to do when you're looking for a certain look. If you want more of a faded black, then that tone curve will, learning what part of that tone curve to bring up or down will tell you how to do that. And so learning about it is the first thing. But then there's a lot about, you know, just finding who you are, which can be helpful to follow other photographers or look online and see what you're drawn to, what types of editing style, but shooting style, all of it, what you're drawn to. But I think you need to have a buffer there in your brain, a little bit of a filter, to be able to know that you probably don't want to be exactly like some of those people. You want to be your own. Mm-hmm. And two, you have to know, like, a lot of some of these photographers that are famous, that have incredible images, they're all consistent. They are partially only consistent because they live in a certain part of the world, and that's where it looks. Right. That's what it looks like, organically. And if you live in a completely different part of the world, then you have no setting that looks like that. Your images are not going to look the same.
Right.
You can have aspects of it. You know, you can have plenty of aspects, but there's so interesting to compare even how light looks different in different states.
Absolutely.
And so there are so many factors, but I think that helps you get an idea of what you're drawn to, what you want your art to look like. But I would just give a caution to not try to be copycat and make it your own. And then if you get to the point where you were like me, where you just don't, it's becoming not you, you're trying to do something that's not you and that what you don't know how to do, then I would take a step back.
I think that's so interesting. It's kind of, you know, what you said about lighting looking different in different states and people having access to different areas. Me growing up as a photographer in East Texas, where it's just flat, you know, I'm looking at photographers who are shooting in Colorado and in, you know, South America. And I'm like, wow, why can't my images look like this? And it's like, you're shooting in East Texas. Like there's no mountains there. And so I think that's something important for photographers to remember too, is like, work with what you have. And, you know, you're not going to have photos in the mountains if you're shooting in East Texas, but there's some really cool small towns and there's some really cool areas of the woods or fields and things like that you can go to and make it your own regardless of where you are. Yeah, I think it's important too to understand that, you know, you work with what you got, whether that be equipment or physical location. So I think that's,
absolutely.
That's really, really on. So before we go, I want to ask you a couple of questions that I ask at the end of each show. The first one is, who are some of your favorite photographers at the moment? Like, whose work are you following?
Sure, yeah. Well, I would say that, like I said in my last answer, I think, you know, it's very helpful to follow people who inspire you. And so, but I do that in a few different ways. I follow some certain photographers that inspire me, but are in completely different fields of photography than I am, or who have completely different looks and feels than I do. And I think that's important to still do. So one, you know what's happening out there, and you're not only looking at the same type of photography, but it can also inspire you in so many different ways. Nationally, probably internationally known photographer at this point, Hunter Leone, Three Nails Photography. He's had a long history of photography work, but his work looks nothing like mine and nothing probably like mine ever will. I love how his looks, but it's just not how mine will ever look. And But I love the use of props that he uses. He's very artistic, very high fashion, brings it into the bridal world, and creates these incredible images that are just very whimsical and things that I would never think of before, to create extremely artistic images. And so that always inspires me to just add a little bit more, artistry into my work. You know, weddings, it's a very unique combination of photojournalism and portraiture. And you create a lot of moments at weddings, but you also are capturing what is naturally happening. And so there's an element that you have to fuse those two parts of photography. And there's a line there for sure. You sometimes don't want to create too much that's not naturally happening, but also you want to, you know, encourage things to naturally happen in maybe a more appealing or artistic way.
Yeah.
or in a certain location that may look better. And so there's that line for sure, and photographers go different directions on that. But looking at other photographers like that, who do like mostly studio work and super almost like fantasy like images, you would think that has nothing to do with some wedding photography, but there's a lot of artistry that you can apply to your even everyday work.
Yeah.
Follow and love a lot of local photographers, and I think that's really important to do if you are actually especially in the wedding industry, but in the photography industry overall, in a local market. You know, there's our Central Arkansas photography Facebook group, and just individuals that are in it. We all claim, collaboration over competition, and we would love community over competition. And so we all, support each other and want to see each other succeed. And it's not like that everywhere. And so it's really a blessing to have that type of community in Central Arkansas. But it's also, it can also turn into a comparison issue for you. For a lot of people I know, decide not to follow their in quote competitors or other local photographers, because they will struggle with always comparing themselves to that person if they are ahead, or why their images never look like theirs, or every time they see their image, someone else's images, they get insecure about their own and want to start all over or whatever. And I think that, is good to monitor in yourself how you respond to following your competitors or other people in your market. And that can also be applicable to the national photographers as well. But how you respond, if that really is an issue for you in terms of comparison and really brings you down, then maybe it's not as healthy for you to follow those type of photographers and see their work all the time. And maybe you need to really just focus on your own. But on the flip side, I think it's always important to know what's happening in your market, see what kind of weddings they're also shooting, maybe it's trends that they are incorporating, so it can give you inspiration of how to step up your game, but also to be inspired to always be getting better, no matter if it's editing or shooting. That doesn't mean, okay, scratch everything, but to always be pursuing growth in your work.
Man, I think that's so important. And I think that's great advice. Speaking of the next question, what advice would you give to a young photographer who's wanting to improve? And you can talk about editing as you already have, or just in general, wanting to improve their work as a whole.
Yeah. It's probably the cliche, but you really you're going to have to get out there and you're going to have to shoot. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think now I'm look back and I'm blessed and thankful that I had the friends that I did who just let me take pictures of them, because some friends don't want to do that.
Right.
But that's what started me. And thankfully I had those friends who would pretend to be models in some random field. And so I could practice. And of course they thought it was fun for them and got some so images out of it. But they weren't trying to be models either. It was more so to be a good friend for me.
Yeah.
And so I think you need to get out there, whatever you want to shoot, you need to practice that. It's great to practice everything, but if you want to do portraiture or weddings, you need to be shooting people. Yes, you're gonna shooting buildings and landscapes are still going to help you, but it's very different. So you need to be shooting what you want to shoot. And sometimes it's very difficult if you want to do weddings and you have no wedding experience and no way to get into a wedding. But I, as a young photographer, I would really suggest to everybody to reach out to your local photographers that you know, or maybe that you don't know, but you've just seen and look up to, and see if you can tag along. And sometimes that might be second shooting and actually shooting for them and helping them get images that you give them, and sometimes not. I just tagged along sometimes at weddings. I would hold their bags and just watch what they would do. Yeah. And so I could get a sense of, one, how a wedding day runs, but also, like, what are they doing in terms of posing, or what are they, you know, like, sometimes I had the option during downtime to ask, like, okay, so tech specs, how did you shoot that? You know, what are your settings, whatever. And sometimes they were open to that, sometimes maybe, you know, not. But and most of the time, you know, people are going to, you know, be willing to tell you that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, some people have certain secrets, but I don't think, you know, your settings, some of that is basically, you know, public knowledge anyways.
Right.
So I think asking questions and not being afraid to get out there is really going to help you. And then, like, we bring it back all the way to the beginning. Just getting, you know, at least one semi-professional lens will make a huge world of difference in your work. Yes, I'm a huge, advocate of your art doesn't matter with your equipment, and you can make incredible work with some kit lenses. But like I said, I bought that used, really old 50 1.8, and just the ability to have a low aperture changed my work forever. And really, you know, can set it apart to help it look more professional. Now, that is not true everywhere, and you don't have to have shallow depths of field to be professional, but it opens you up to a whole other side of photography and closer to other professional images or gear. And you can buy some really cheap low aperture lenses. Doesn't have to be the top of the line thing. That will change your work for sure.
Yeah. Tyler, that is great advice. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really love getting to chat with you, and I hope you're back soon, because I want to dive into some more stuff that we got into that we didn't have time to cover in depth.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you for everyone who is listening. We will see you next week on Live from the Darkroom.